Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Today we are here to talk about a wonderful film history documentary titled Harold and Lillian, A Hollywood Love Story. And, God, I need to kind of catch my breath on this one. This one's going to blow you away. And you're so lucky you get to see it on Netflix. It's streaming right now. So after this, you can hang up and catch it. Great little serendipitous story about how we discovered this film. Didn't mean to say I here at Talking because it's we, not I. And this is going to be a heavy duty film because we're going to discuss here so many different films that you guys love. We're not even going to have enough time to discuss 100th of them. This documentary is about Harold, storyboard artist, and how he fell in love with this researcher, not a researcher, named Lillian. I'm sorry, there's so much they contributed to cinema. I shouldn't be forgetting their last name, but I'm so in love with their story. I think of calling it Harold and Lillian. That's probably why they called it Harold and Lillian, a love story. So the deal is, this guy was a storyboard artist for like Spielberg, Hitchcock. I know I'm not supposed to say it, but Polanski. He contributed to films like Easy Rider, The Graduate, all the way up to Platoon, Rain Man. In between that, a couple of films ourselves, or the Academy, or Mr. Best Picture Oscar might have heard of, Kramer versus Kramer, Rocky Balboa. No, Rocky, not Rocky Balboa, Rocky. Annie Hall, Deer Hunter. There's four or five best pictures right there of the 1970s. Let's see. And wow, it is something. I really looked at this and I thought, for as long as I've been studying film history, it is weird to me that I missed. And hold on, I think we have the director. Is that Dan? Hello?
Yes, hi. Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I was just, I don't know. I feel like you made an unexplainable documentary, which is a good thing. I've been trying to tell people about this, and they get to a certain point, and they go, "What? Wait a minute! No, that felt and that felt and that. Wait, no. How did I not hear of them?" I go, "I have no idea. And we'll get into that with you. It's such a. I was talking about this earlier with our producer Jim, who discovered this film. Who's calling in a minute.
Okay.
We're just baffled, and when he gets on air, he'll want to hear. We're just baffled how we had an of these this team. We know the age old Hollywood joke is, you know, I really found that script, but the other guy collected the Oscar, or, you know, I didn't get credit. That well, we've all went stuff these before we didn't get credit, and that's kind of okay. It's your rite of passage. But then we were kind of like, well, if in the 1970s you go Kramer versus Kramer, Rocky, Annie Hall, Deer Hunter, and I think there was one other. You go, five of the 10 pictures were these people. I go, okay, wait a minute. There's where I would have been really starting some credit riots. So I thought it was, I mean, that would have been going way too far for me. I don't care if it got me blacklisted. I was like, okay, I got one. I got credit for one of them. I'm fine. What I think also did great that I was mentioning in the intro was that, and I mean this in a respectful way, was that right now off the top of my head, I don't remember their last name. And I think what's so cute about that is that the title of your movie, I have really just been calling them Harold and Lillian. It makes me think of like Harold and Maude, but they're not a teenager and an 80-year-old woman for anyone out there. And it's just so quaint, and it's just such a cute story, and it just... I mean, so I mean, really, how did you come about?
Right. How did I come about? So I was a student at the American Film Institute, let's see, in the late 90s, around 97, and Harold, and my professor there for the production design program was Robert Boyle, who designed North by Northwest, The Birds, Marnie, and one day he, as he does, he brought in some of his friends and colleagues to sort of discuss their experiences, and he brought over Harold Michelson, who we learned was the storyboard artist working very closely with Bob, and then Harold was demonstrating this technique that he uses called forced camera angle projection, where what's kind of mind-blowing about what Harold did, apart from anything else, apart from conceiving and these incredible iconic images that sort of directors sort of absorbed into their sort of mise-en-scene, that he could, through a simple drawing, show you, the team, the creative team behind a film, what any image would look like from the perspective of a specific camera lens, the height of the camera, the tilt of the camera, how far away the camera is from the action. And beyond that ability, he was one of the greatest cinema minds, you know, Harold Michelson. This, you know, and you see Harold's drawings in Hitchcock books. You see them in storyboard books. But getting to meet Harold and then he would invite me to, so I was making a documentary about Robert Boyle called The Man on Lincoln's Nose, which is the working title of North by Northwest. That was sort of what I was doing my time off as a film student, because I was like, somebody's got to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
This is 20-something years ago. I'm thinking to myself, sitting in these classes, looking at these, like, they were like in their 90s, basically, thinking somebody has to be telling their story. I mean, this is an amazing story. And what was so beautiful, kind of speaking to your introduction, what's so beautiful about Robert Boyle, but in this case, Harold and Lillian as a couple and as artists, and is that they were not interested in the spotlight. They were so humble. They were working people. They were like behind the scenes. This is a job. If Harold's job is to get a script by Mel Brooks, Hitchcock, or let's say Mike Nichols, and it's The Graduate, and who knows what Mike Nichols is going to realize? I mean, it's his second film. Harold did illustrations for his first film.
Oh, that's,
you know,
a good one.
That's his job. His job.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. His job is to sit there and interpret the script visually and present visual ideas to someone like Mike Nichols. But it's a job. He leaves it on his desk. He goes home. And that was, so this documentary looks at kind of what happens at home when he goes home at night. Because it's a 60-year marriage, a partnership. Lillian's doing the research that leads to some of these images. She has one of the greatest research libraries in Hollywood. And it's a marriage and a creative partnership that lasted 60 years.
Well, now I'm what I was most interested in, and sorry for one sec here, if I have to speak to our producer real quick. I think he might be having problems with the CO line.
Okay.
Let me just make sure that everything's cool. I remember that now. You were an AFI student, and that one moment. Sorry, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Jim?
Yeah, yeah.
Just call that number that I text you.
I got the 2051 ending.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'll call.
Okay, talk to you in a sec. Sometimes, every once in a while, because this is an internet studio, you know how it is. The thing we love about the show, and I always joke every time it happens, is that why we had this technical catastrophe, and I was just going, a very calm person, but it was enough of a catastrophe to get me upset. And the producer said, dude, we're interviewing filmmakers. Every single one of them had some kind of technical catastrophe. And I was like, hey, he's like, don't use it as an excuse. Don't do it every episode. He's like, but they'll understand something went wrong. I was like, oh, yeah. Let me bring Jim in real quick.
Okay, take your time.
Yeah.
Hello, Jim. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
This is Dan, the director.
Hello, Jim. Nice to meet you.
Hey, John. Yes, the same. Sorry about that delay, but I had two numbers and I kept hitting the wrong one.
All good. I just mentioned to him how sometimes we have some phone issues with the internet. Dan just explained to us how he discovered this while he was at AFI. He got to meet Harold, and he explained to us also one of the things Harold's best, well, that we saw in the documentary, was being able to draw what actual lens it was. And we were talking about Lillian's research library, which I think Jim both wanted to visit. We were kind of just like, well, never mind this movie. Let's jump and see this library.
No, right.
Yeah.
Daniel, if you could just one more time mention that short film, because I know, like you were saying, guests like to be behind the scenes, that Jim would like the title of your short film, what that was supposed to be. Just that tiny part.
Sure, you bet. So we were talking about how I found Harold Lillian, or I first met them. I was a student at AFI. Robert Boyle, production designer, longtime Hitchcock production designer, Robert Boyle, was my professor there. And he was 90, and I started making a documentary about him because a documentary needed to be made about him. And his sort of unsung contributions to Hitchcock. And I thought by making this film, which was called The Man on Lincoln's Nose, a working title to North by Northwest, well, we discover in the film that Robert Boyle really was literally on Mount Rushmore, on Lincoln's nose, taking photographic stills from all the angles that later became painted backdrops and photographic blow-ups in an MGM studio where they shot the climax to North by Northwest. So The Man on Lincoln's Nose was the working title to North by Northwest, and it just seemed really fitting to sort of revive that title because we have photographic evidence that indeed it was Robert Boyle. So,
yeah, I knew Jim would love that little tidbit of we're so into those facts where it's like, you know, Al Pacino drank this kind of coffee on Dog Afternoon. So this, I wanted to just tell the audience, and we thank you, Dan. This story was so serendipitous. Just very quickly, Jim called me up very late, which we're very good friends. I first thought something was wrong, and he's like, "You got to watch this documentary on Netflix." So I thought, okay, you're not in the hospital, all right. And so I turned it on, I checked it out, and I was like, okay, you know. And so then I just thought, maybe this film has a website. They're new to Netflix. We reached out to the director, and one or two days later, we began the conversation. So we want to thank, you know, on air, every filmmaker that comes on, and especially that you are someone who, I'm just saying this so the audience knows, and the background, speaking of behind the scenes, your producer was Mr. DeVito, and then also that film you just told us about got nominated for an Oscar for Best Doc Short Subject. So congratulations on that.
Thank you,
that's awesome. And I really liked what you were saying, and what question popped in my mind was when you said people kind of like to stay behind the scenes. Did you really like, I'm always interested, we've had some guests on that are Oscar nominees, and do you always just step forward as your work is just a continuation of what it is? So you really want Harold and Lillian to be what the thing is, and you don't want anybody ever thinking maybe it's better because you're an Oscar nominee? Like, how does that turn into how you move forward as a filmmaker?
Gosh, you know, it's really about getting behind a subject that you can put yourself behind on a mental, spiritual level, because you're going to be thinking about it, working on it for at least 2 years, and then another 2 to 3 years distributing it. So that's a commitment of 5 years, and you need, or I need, to tell a story that is meaningful and that's something I'm curious about that I don't really understand. And you sort of, you know, move into the creative process and it sort of takes a hold of you. This film for sure did. It didn't necessarily start off as a desire to make a feature length doc. I was just wanting to honor two people I knew quite well. Thought I'd had lunch with them, and, you know, many times. Lillian's library was at DreamWorks Animation Studios for 17 years. And when I was a student, they kind of took me under their wing, as you can see from the documentary, they took a lot of people under their wing and nurtured them. And they're just a kind of, and so I thought about celebrating them. And as I started doing interviews, I realized that I wasn't alone, that there are like hundreds of amazing Hollywood filmmakers out there, on directors, production designers, writers, moguls, Hollywood moguls. I mean, all these sorts of people that whose lives were transformed both personally and artistically by Harold and Lillian. And beyond that was this amazing love story. And I was, you know, it was a challenge, but all these pieces started to come together. As I say, the cinema god sort of started to point to this idea that there is a potential feature length doc there. So you get behind the film. I got behind the film, and we really were able to. I was really emotionally connected and curious and connected to understanding how they got through 60 years, you know, and sort of figuring out a way to tell the story that you really feel the full spectrum of their life, both as individuals and as a couple.
I think, Jim, you lived that. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to also have you on from your, sometimes, Jim, people have said to me, well, what do you mean your producer has never made anything or has made a short film? I said, he's 73 and he's been a film nut since he was 13. I said, so if you've been a film nut for 60 years, that kind of, you know, a little bit more than someone who went to, you know, 2 years of film school with me. So I love that this, when I saw this, I thought Jim saw these movies new and saw these images before they became iconic. Like you were saying, someone gives Mike Nichols something, we don't know it's going to become The Graduate. So what I liked, and Jim, you, of course, we've had conversations. We did a podcast about Elizabeth Taylor. We're not trashing her marriage record. But Jim, what could you say about what a great job I think the documentary did of showing, like, 60 years for a Hollywood marriage is beyond long. I mean, it's like, that's Guinness Book of World Records. So what do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, that 60 years is incredible, yes. One of the things that got to me was in the sharing about their lives, their personal lives. I have a very, very close friend who's Asperger's, on the, you know, the spectrum. And to see that, you know, what was brought, you know, forward on that actually hit me really, really hard. When Lillian said that, you know, she was told that her son had to go out into life and she had to, like, actually die, you know.
Yeah.
She couldn't coddle him and the whole thing. And it just hit me between the eyes how much I do that with my friends. And it was just a real wake-up call. I mean, this documentary hit me just because of the graciousness and the grace of Lillian, you know, and what was shared there. And I don't know. I think that sometimes I forget how much impact what I see has on me. And this documentary was just, you know, that one bit of it right there just struck home. You know, the graciousness and the grace of those people just, you know, blew me away. You know, like you said earlier, they mentored people, but the ability to go hang out, have a sandwich, talk, just to be in that atmosphere, contribution is incredible.
Yeah. Isn't it? You're right. I completely agree. I think we take for granted, I take for granted now. I see Lily and every, you know, once a month we're hanging out, but I take for granted how special it is. And maybe this documentary invites audiences to kind of get under their wing for a second and feel that graciousness and that these are two people with the glitziest business in the world who are like opening their arms and inviting you like into their life and they're like real human beings, and yet they're making some of those amazing, iconic images in film history, and they don't care for the credit. And it's that tension, that kind of that connective tissue between what we produce in our lives, you know, that creative legacy we leave behind, and the struggle of having a family and keeping our you know, understanding who we are within all that and having our own identity and everything. And you were referring to Alan Michelson, who's turning 70. He's Lily and Harold's first son. He was diagnosed with autism, but back then doctors were telling Lillian that she's a, quote, refrigerator mother. She has no feeling and love for this child. I mean, it's,
Well, there's lots of things.
I just wanted to thank you for having made the documentary. I'm very, very serious. That really had hit me in the heart, hit me in the head to have seen that sharing of humanity, of, you know, our humanness, and what we, you know, I'm actually getting tongue-tied on this. Because I could start crying at how much that hit me. And thank you.
And that's a compliment, Dan, because Jim and I have, I couldn't keep track. It's probably in the years that we've talked film, if you were to divide it, count the hours. And there's not many films that make him cry. So when it does, it's a very, it's something very deep. And it's not because it's revered or, everybody cried at Kramer versus Kramer or. But what you guys are mentioning this humanity, and what I like too, feeling so connected, was that there was also, if you weren't connected for everyone out there, if for any reason I couldn't see how you're not drawn into the people documentary, you'll definitely be drawn in. It's a two-way street from where you're also just drawn in by what films they were worked on. And I always wonder, who's a part of this? You know, you read your Oliver Stone bio and you, okay, this is why he made Platoon. He was a vet, or Rocky. He had to write his own role to get a start. And then you start to really look back through the decades and see that these, you know, like, they weren't films to get a start. They weren't films to become famous. They weren't films to get a jet and a house and get all that stuff that comes with it. And to, for you, what was it like? Obviously, you know, that's what I'm saying for the audience. To me, a documentarian is just is a filmmaker, researcher. And so, what is it like to research? And I'm always doing this for story purposes. I don't like talking about who I've interviewed, but I sat down to interview Peter Bogdanovich, and I thought, pardon my language, I thought, what in the fuck am I going to ask him when he's written books about interviewing Howard Hawks and Capra? And guy's not only heard every question, but he's written, so what was it like as you have to, like, you're going out there and you're researching this researcher who's Spielberg and Coppola, have wanted to own, like, in a proper way, respectful way. Like, what was that like for you? I mean,
sure. The you know, the creative process of documentary filmmaking is you sort of have an idea of what it's going to be about, and it more often than not ends up becoming something completely different than what you expected. And in this case, that definitely rang true. You know, there was an enormous amount of discovery. You think you know someone, maybe your brother, your sister, your mom and dad, your grandparents, you think you know, try making a documentary about them. You'll really get to know them, you know, and it's kind of like taking a microscope, right? And then you're into someone's life, into someone's soul, basically. But you're telling a story, and it can't be the full spectrum of that person's life experiences. And in this case, you're the interview process. You sort of go with what you're curious about, and then you sit down with your 20, 30, 40 hours of raw footage, and you're like, all right, what's the story that I need to tell? How do I sort of distill all of this kind of incredible life in two extraordinary careers, two extraordinary individuals? That's four stories, and then the fifth one is their combined creative and romantic partnership. So how do we weave in all this together? And so the questions sort of, it's you go out there and you ask your questions, but in terms of cinema craft, in terms of post-production, in terms of telling a story, it's finding a way to sort of weave all these narrative threads together so that there's some unified thematic sort of approach to it. And that was the challenging part, you know, because it's like, all right, so Harold worked on The Birds, but what can we learn about, you know, him and his creative process? What can we learn about Hitchcock that we don't know? Well, we don't know how Hitchcock worked with his storyboard artists. And if you think about Hitchcock, you think about the legacy of, you know, in the myth, really. Actually, I just completed a 15-minute documentary called Writing with the Camera, which will be a program included on the Hitchcock's notorious Blu-ray coming out on the Criterion Collection. I think in January, but anyhow, I learned a lot more. So, you know, it's exciting because I'm curious, apart from anything else, I'm curious about how filmmakers think and about the craftsmanship that goes into making a film. How do you translate ideas, themes, characters, narratives into vision, to mise-en-scène, you know, the French term for what's in the frame and how is it composed, right? And yeah. Harold, you know, this in coming across this sort of story about Harold, how he conceived the leg shot in The Graduate, you know, Lillian's, oh, he's a leg man, and, you know, and it's also interesting since releasing the film to see people's reactions to that, because there's a lot of people who hold dear to the idea that, well, it's the auteur director that comes up with these shots. Come on. Wasn't that Mike Nichols'
right.
idea? Well, why should it not
of course,
be someone
else? Yes, and that, right. Ground Zero, French Wave era, right, and American cinema copying French cinema, the studio system's gone. I really liked how they went into that shot because I know that's like everybody's favorite shot, but I know the first time I saw it, I was like, is that really supposed to be like a Gina point of view? Because I'd never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, 19,
sure.
Now, so this is 1998 or something, and I was just curious that a camera I've never seen a camera between a guy's legs. So I thought, what are they trying to say right here? And I kept playing it back, and I was like, of course, as a dumb 19-year-old, I'm like, great shot, you know,
sure.
What a genius. But had no idea what a effect it had. And, you know, the funny thing was my grandma had told me to watch this movie. So I remember thinking, like, well, am I supposed to call my grandma tomorrow, tell her, like, you know,
right.
The vaginal camera was great, grandma. Like, and it was just so funny. I look back down, I'm just like, wow, my grandma was telling me to watch a movie about getting with your mom's friend, like, or your dad's friend. like, like, boy. But so I think Jim and I had kind of talked about this. So this is a question I know would come from both of us. Was, as you're going through, and I'm sure like you're saying you knew, then you got to talk to them. How did you separate not going into too many specific films? I understood you had to do the angles and the birds, but I mean, there's just so many films there. How did that run off on a tangent on that?
Well, the thing is, you have an idea that you need to express. You know, you have an idea, and a documentary, the beauty of documentaries is it's an opportunity to sort of convey complex ideas in a way that's engaging, entertaining, right? But you're conveying an idea, and you make your point, and you move on, right? So it's like, all right, well, how did Harold do this? And let's pick one specific, you know, for example, one of the kind of creative tools that production designers used, starting with Alexander Trauner, who did The Apartment. Now, think about The Apartment, that Harold was the illustrator on that. But Alexander Trauner, who came from Europe, used this technique called forced perspective sets, right? So that famous shot of the office, right, going all the way to kind of into infinity, that's a forced perspective set, and sort of the desks get smaller and they hire small people to go the very, very back, whatnot. But Harold used that technique in to striking effect on Star Trek The Motion Picture. His not his first production design job, maybe his second production design job. He got an Oscar nomination for that in 1979. But, you know, I'm like, all right, I would love to, you know, that's why on the DVD you can watch a bonus, you know, feature that's a 7-minute exploration of Harold's work on Star Trek The Motion Picture. But really, I only have like basically a minute of screen time to get in and out of Star Trek because we're in the third act and what the film's about at this point is not technique, right? This is the third act of Harold's life. We're kind of moving chronologically, skipping around a little bit. So anyhow, I think I'm answering your question because you just sort of have to – there's all sorts of underlining sort of narrative concerns to move the story forward and make certain points.
I just
with
have
specific
to say,
titles.
And then just feel free to jump in with something, but I have to let people know out there – I saw this the other day for free, so I don't know why I didn't mention it in the last few episodes, but The Apartment is on Amazon Prime for free. On Netflix, the TV show called The Apartment, so we are not talking about the TV show. And I'm thankful they've never remade this Jack Lemmon movie. I would protest whatever theater to open it. This was the 1960 Best Picture. I might be wrong, but it's the first time, too. A director won the screenplay, director, and Best Picture Oscar. I know Coppola's done it, and I'm into weird, pointless facts like that. But yes, check out The Apartment. You can find that. I mean, Dan, that is in so many movies. I mean, it's obviously talked about on the commentary of American Beauty that Kevin Spacey.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry for saying Kevin Spacey. His character is in an office, and... The Apartment is painted all over that film. So thank you for mentioning these films. And Jim, if there's anything you'd like to ask, please jump in.
Just what I want to add, appreciation. Just pure and simple. And I know that I'm going to come up with all sorts of questions when this is over. I just want to hear you talk about this. The whole thing just has had a real effect, and I mean, I went and storyboard artist, so I did some research, not too well, but you know, found little things about other people had done it. One of the little gems was that Guillermo del Toro was a storyboard artist for a while.
Really.
Yeah, and I went, oh my God. You know, it just, the cross-fertilization, the, you know, that whole studio setup, how a, you know, movie comes about, to have this piece added to my just my, you know, love of films is, you know, yeah, I guess I'm getting tongue-tied, and I should probably shut my mouth.
Well, when it comes to, and when it comes to film, neither one of us are tongue-tied. So that was the other thing, too. When you hear the intro, I'm a little bit, I guess we could say, a pitcher who's walked first guy. Because I was just like, how do I introduce this film? How do I properly explain this? And just even like, as you're going through this film, everyone, you're seeing all these films that these people did, and you're thinking, okay, can we spend 5 minutes on each of them? I think I even said in the review that I would, if this was like one of those Ken Burns, 10-hour documentaries about the war or baseball, that I would watch that, because it was just so, right here, us sitting and talking, this whole show for us that we've been on for 4 years, we're so blessed, has all just been what you said, is to hear the filmmaker's process. And we've been fortunate to have production designers and art directors and student filmmakers to Oscar-minis just to show, you know, everyone's a filmmaker. Or, you know, the Oscar nominee was a student once, the student one day will be an Oscar nominee. So we just always want to hear what made you think of that idea, or why that short film? Why'd you go with that camera angle? We kind of think of it as like we get kind of free master's classes. We get to.
Paul, I want to jump in because, you know, one of the questions that did come up for me is you did so many hours of the interview. What's some of the stuff that didn't get in there?
Yeah, good question. I think at one point Lillian was able to sort of write down how many films she worked on. I think that came, there was like a list of 400 American classic American studio films that she worked on.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, she'd be working on like 6, 7, or, you know, as a film researcher, and kind of like, I think it'd be great to talk about what Lillian did a little bit. You know, she was a film researcher. She bought the research library from Samuel Goldwyn in the 1960s when they were about to fold, and they had no money. They were living on Harold's, you know, wage as a storyboard artist. They had 3 children, and they took their life savings and on a whim bought this research library. And Lillian was a research assistant there. But then she developed into the most sought after researcher in the industry. What does that mean? It just, if you're writing a film or designing a film and you didn't know what the wallpaper looked like in a, you know, in a house in Missouri in 1916 or whatever, she'll help you figure that out. But in terms of picking, like, you know, what kind of wild stories took place in her life, the film takes us into the story of how she researched Scarface, right? And she's like at her research library at Zoetrope, and she invites this drug lord over who she calls in the film a nice Jewish boy. And he gave her all the information she needed on what drug labs look like, cocaine labs, this, that, and the other. I mean, she had a Rolodex the size of a tire, and with contacts and relationships on both sides of the law. This is a woman, this is kind of an extraordinary woman who could help you see what you're not allowed to see. Then get that information to the filmmakers. I mean, she worked with Oliver Stone, with Stanley Kubrick on Full Metal Jacket. I mean, it's kind of amazing, the spectrum of her life's work. So we couldn't fit all the films and all the amazing nuggets of life experiences and wisdom that she shared over the course of 2 years of interviews, basically. But beyond that, I think what sort of I think what sort of transformed the film into something that made it, you know, meaningful, is that she shared a kind of the inner story of her life of being an orphan when and escaping orphanages, you know, and meeting Harold when she was 17 and eloping to Hollywood when she was 19 and starting a life. I mean, it's just like that whole journey fascinated me. But one of the other things I wanted to mention was the challenge that all doc filmmakers come at some point have to ask, well, how are we going to visualize and dramatize events that took place in the past? How are we going to make that compelling for an audience? Because we don't have footage to tell that story. And I was really fortunate to partner with a very talented animator, Patrick Maté, who was at the time working at DreamWorks Animation when I met him. And together, we arrived at the approach of storyboarding their life story. And that's the vehicle in which we sort of tell the story, the personal story, as well as the sort of all of the anecdotes to do with Hitchcock and Mike Nichols. And it's like, all right, we need to sketch out Harold. He's on the soundstage with Mike Nichols rehearsing with Anne Bancroft and Dustin Hoffman. And Anne Bancroft says, what are you doing here? You know, who are you? Who the hell are you?
Yeah.
You know? And so we had so much fun, you know, doing that. And Patrick was nominated just recently for a Cinema Eye Honors, which is a big, big honor for outstanding achievement in graphic design and animation, which is a wonderful thing, you know, to sort of get that kind of recognition. So I think there are all sorts of things happening with this film that sort of and the thing is sort of important to note, you know, in terms of the process is that, how do you get I mean, Lillian wasn't exactly someone who's going to sort of sit down with me, a longtime friend, and tell me her life story. It's very guarded. So I'm interested in spiritual films that get inside you and inside the subject and sort of humanize and convey some kind of dramatic, you know, some kind of truth about what it means to be human. And in this case, these two people also worked in the movies. And so I think that's sort of what sort of the what compelled me was the challenge to put all that together, to put all those components together. I've never seen it before, and it was a very exciting process.
That's a brilliant thing. Until you just mentioned it, I didn't even think about that of how you just storyboarded their life about a storyboard artist, because I thought the Anne Bancroft thing, I was like, yeah, of course, and it looked so perfect, it looked like a real photo, and then I was like, and then yeah, that story you're talking about, Kingpin, I was thinking, right. I know on the Scarface DVD, Oliver Stone talked about spending time in Bolivia to research film, such a nice guy. Nothing against Oliver Stone. I just find that funny. I'm going to go hang out with some coke dealers and come back with the research.
Great.
So I really found that to be so interesting because I hate saying when you're not in the film business, but general audience sometimes, and you obviously don't think that. You see a film, I'll just say Scarface, and you think that they just came up with that, but that someone had to really look at, well, how, not saying Lillian knew or did it, but I'm saying that there was someone out there who had to find out how did they really pull their machetes, how did they really, you know, down to how they probably provided how they really snort. But I mean, those little details come from somewhere. And that's what I was so intrigued by you capturing. And again, I say this in the greatest way, that the film was too short. When it came to the end, I was like, huh? I mean, great ending, great film, everyone. Like, you're going to be, I mean that in his, like, an exciting way. Like, why are we leaving Disneyland? So I guess this kind of ties into how Jim went. Did you have, like, I think the film runs about 90 minutes. Did you have, like, a two-hour cut or a two-hour and 15-minute cut? I mean, how many cuts
Sure.
did you go through? So you were like, okay, this is...
Yeah, our world premiere at the Cannes Film Festival was like 20 minutes longer, basically. You know, because
we
submitted a rough cut. And then they selected the film, big honor. but big scramble to finish the film. And over the course of the next year, we were showing it at festivals, and, you know, I had the opportunity to, I don't think anyone's made more digital cinema packages, DCPs, which is how you project a film, than we did for this film. Like, just about every other festival, I had, like, a new cut of this film, until we finally whittled it down over the course of, like, a year and a half of festivals to, like, 94 minutes. And then it had its theatrical run in the same cut is now on Netflix. But it took that long. So like 2 years to make the film from the minute I had the idea and I sat down with Lillian to start interviewing and collecting archival material all the way through our festival premiere. That was 2 years. And then another year of basically editing, continuous editing, trimming. Until it got down to its final length.
Wow.
Awesome. You said in the documentary that she was a little bit reticent about talking and how that,
yeah.
I guess she had to open up and you got to get to that sense of humor, that sense of fun.
The, right.
You know, what you showed was like, oh man, this woman, she'd just be fun. Her sense of humor that you picked up on and got, you know, it threw out to me. It was like, that was a kick in the half.
Indeed. I mean, I really love thinking about, I actually have a course I teach documentary storytelling. And one of the things I enjoy sort of looking back on and communicating to my students is this process of called the assembly cut. The assembly cut is before the rough cut, maybe halfway through filming, a year in, right? I said, all right, let's take, we had like 25 hours of footage. Let's take the best selects we have. Selects are sort of sound bites and stories that really resonate. You don't know why or what the structure is or how you're going to dramatically sort of construct the piece yet. But you're going to assemble kind of in chronological order. And at that point, I thought, I'm making the first ever doc about a storyboard artist. Like, I'm so excited to dive into this, you know. And Lillian's story is great, and Harold's story is great. But, oh, my gosh, this is going to be like, you know, I'm going to pull the curtain on this story that, you know, how this sort of someone who sits at a desk in a room with a magnifying glass and a drawing table and comes up some of the greatest shots you've ever seen, charcoal and ink, right? And I'm watching this assembly cut, and it's about 4 hours of selects. And what jumped out at me is that I was wrong, that the most amazing footage, the most beautiful story that emerges from this sort of really raw assembly of footage is Lillian. And what a character, you know, and her ability to tell personal and stories about, you know, her raising her autistic child. And you know what I love, and speaking to what you're saying, and this also connects to my second film, Something's Gonna Live, conversations with six great cinema artists that included Robert Boyle, Henry Bumstead, who designed Vertigo, Albert Nozaki, who designed War of the Worlds, The Ten Commandments, Conrad Hall, cinematographer. We're just talking.
Oh,
about
Conrad Hall, he's the man. Sorry.
Haskell Wexler. So that's in what I love.
Oh, you got Haskell
then,
Wexler before he passed. I'm sorry, you got Haskell.
Yeah,
thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So this is like Harold Lillian's the third film in a trilogy that started with The Man on Lincoln's Nose. So coming back to what you were saying is what I love about these people, you know, these octogenarians that I came across at film school, is there that later kind of became like family to me, but was just their attitude towards life that they could laugh about, that they could like, they had both wit and philosophy about what it means to be, you know, human, what it just is that, you know, the troubled times we go through. I mean, Harold had this extraordinary sense of humor, and so did Lillian. And it's kind of like a sense of humor that is sort of like fading with the times in a way. But that, you know, it's not a cynical sense of humor. It's something else. And
no, it was just, you know, again, thank you. Because there was that sense of fun.
Yes.
And the way you picked up on, you know, the dark times they went through. I mean, that sounded like, you know, really, really dark. And here is somebody who's older and has managed to come out of all of those years with fun. Fun. Thank you. You know, I guess I'm being a bit gushy, but I really
No, not at all.
It.
No, that's true. You hear about a lot of those people. You get, you know, like Haskell Wexler. I mean, I would hear countless stories about his, you know, he's Haskell. I mean, he had to have his conviction to do the work he did. I mean, my gosh, Coming Home and Bound for Glory. But the time when I got to meet him one time, and I just, you know, I've heard all these stories about that he's not a prick, but that he's prickly, he's crabby. And he was just so nice to me. And I just thought, like, you know, almost not like a why are you being nice to me because we're all people, but I just thought, you know, with there was just such a genuine nature. And I love that. You had these people who had probably been rooms with the biggest crabs and the biggest pains in the ass, and still managed to come through being genuine. And look, now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, how the heck were they not jaded in some way? You know, that almost would be like a side question. Made me think, like, people that aren't even a tenth that far or can contribute that much are already tired of who they're working with or their boss and say them or so Jim, what you're saying about that genuine nature, and I have to thank you also, Dan, that you're carrying these artists who I know, of course, it's been 2 years I think since Pat Wexler passed, and Conrad Hall, I know it's been longer than that because I think he had passed for he got his American Beauty Oscar. I know his now Conrad Hall Jr. is a DP. Capturing these artists right now, I really appreciate you doing it because I think it's sad. I think it also goes on in music. You know, when you bring up some jazz piano player or saxophone player, and who the heck is that? And then you hear them listen to music, and it's like, oh, the person you like is just doing John Coltrane, or you know, like, so you don't like John Coltrane, but you like the guy who copies John Coltrane. So to dig as deep as you have is, I think it's just what made Jim and I so amazed. I mean, I can understand now why you called me at 11 o'clock at night, Jim.
Well, thank you both. I really appreciate it. And it's been nice to speak about it with you both. Thank you.
No, thank you. And please, you know, if you have any films in the future that you'd like to promote or come on, or we have so many different panels, sub-series, different things, please let us know. Or if you have a mailing list, we like to continue supporting guests and all that stuff.
Terrific.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump in. And please, I mean, really, if you have any more insight, any more experience to share, please, you know, I would love to keep my mouth shut and just let you talk. So, you know, again, please. I'm serious. Again.
Well, I would say that to summarize some of the kind of the thoughts kicking around my head right now is something that Haskell Wexler says at the very end of my second feature, which is the part of the trilogy. Harold Lillian is the conclusion of the trilogy. So in Something's Gonna Live, I mean, Haskell looks back on all this kind of conversation that we're having about, you know, the good old film, you know, the good old days. And he said something along the lines of you know, I had it in my head a second ago, but hold on a second. You know, but he's like, I'm not saying that the film, you know, I'm paraphrasing now. I'm not saying that what we did was better than what's happening today, but what was great was us trying to make it great. And I think that's something I really appreciate about these guys.
That does sound like something that you would hear Haskell Wexler say.
Right.
I was always such a Haskell Wexler nut, and I never understood why other fellow guys in film school didn't know who he was. I remember in film school, since it was like a year after American Beauty, I'm not being snob talking down, but someone actually alluded to the fact that Conrad Hall had gotten his start with American Beauty. And they were like, oh, it's too bad he died before he got his start. And I was like, Butch and Sundance? have you ever heard
Indeed.
Of that? And it's so hard. You know how it is when we love film and we know films. It's hard to not come off like a snob, but to us, it's just like, it's like saying, hello, how are you? It's basic manners. So this real quickly, the second film, as we wrap it up, how can we see the second film? Or if it's under wraps, how you're going to release it? Of course, we're not pushy, but is there anything you could tell us?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. So you can visit my website. It's my first and last name, Daniel Raim, R-A-I-M as in Mary, .com. I'll be putting up a Vimeo on demand link there to that film. I think right now you can purchase the DVD of Something's Gonna Live, which includes the first one, The Man on Lincoln's Nose, as a bonus film, plus a ton of extras as well with Haskell and Bob Boyle, all the other artists talking about their creative process. I think there's a memorable, like, 7-minute, which is, I think it's on iTunes, but it's Bob Boyle and Conrad Hall sitting down in a segment called Life After Film School, which was
a nice
little thing about how they got on, you know, with their careers and sort of progressed both creatively and professionally. And then, of course, Harold Lillian is now available on Netflix. It's streaming in all the English language speaking countries. And it's Harold Lillian is also on Blu-ray through Kino Lorber. And
that's excellent. Well, so people know, when you hear Conrad Hall, that's who in 20 years someone will be saying Roger Deakins was their hero. Roger Deakins, everybody knows Roger Deakins. He's always talking about Conrad Hall. And same with Haskell Wexler. A lot of the younger guys now look to him. And I just wanted to close my thought with what you were talking about, the trying to make it great. Was a friend of mine who knew Haskell for many years said that what he always loved about Haskell was, even until he died, he had something that he was working on. Like the last time they spoke, he knew he only probably had a month or so left, but he was still like, saying, this is what I'm editing, or this is what I'm prepping. And it was kind of like, you're not going to be around, but he was still just like, no, you know, I want to know that when I stop breathing, there's something in the editing room. So these guys, everyone, please check that out. They are
Absolutely.
Called the masters for a reason. So
that
does it for me again. Check out haroldandlilian.com. Your website, Daniel, how do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry.
Raim.
RAIM.com. Please check out that Vimeo link. I'm going to tonight when I get done with some work I have to go do. I have to see this. And Jim, any closing comments for you, Jim?
I just want to ask Mr. Raim to answer questions to let Paul know. Is there any scuttlebutt or any attempt about the Thalberg thing? Because that, when that came up, I went, this just makes
sense. Gosh. Oh, man, that's a really great question. In terms of, like, you know, honoring Lillian Michelson with an honorary Academy Award would be very special. She'd be definitely the first film researcher. And I appreciate you bringing that up. I think I'll move that, see if I can revisit that with some of my colleagues who are also dear friends with Lillian and see if we can move the needle on that. So thank you for bringing that up. It's really appreciated.
Yes.
Yeah, I think right now the president's John Bailey, so that would be someone to go to.
Indeed, exactly, yeah.
Who is a very nice guy. I've been fortunate to get a couple of board dinners and very, very kind, very, very wonderful human being, so...
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you both. It's been really great to.
Thank you. So, take care and have a great day. And Jim, I'll see you soon.
Aloha.
Aloha.